This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Borges injury prevention specialist Megan Gose discusses the dangers of falling and ways to reduce the risk. But first, Perrigo stockholders have until November 13th to decide if they want to sell their shares to pharmaceutical rival Mylan. Several overtures have been made to buy Perrigo, which makes prescription and over-the-counter store brand pharmaceuticals. So far, the company, which has its corporate offices in Allegan, has turned down all offers from Mylan. So now Mylan has taken its offer directly to Perrigo shareholders. David Flanagan is a professor of management in Western Michigan University's Haworth College of Business. His research focuses on, among other things, mergers and acquisitions. David Flanagan, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon. Thank you very much.
So just from the outset here, if you're Mylan and you're looking for a company to acquire, what makes you look a little bit east, since Mylan at least has most of its offices in Pittsburgh, and say a little bit west, excuse me, and say, we would like to buy Perrigo?
Well, these are both world companies, and they're both operating in global markets. And so what they're really looking for is an opportunity for growth. They're looking for somebody who's not in markets that they are in. They're looking for somebody who has markets they're in where they can get economies of scale and maybe some market power. They could be focusing more on organic growth, which is growing their own company or using smaller mergers and acquisitions that they can build on. But they've decided that a path to immediate fast growth is to buy Perrigo, which would then make Mylan the largest generic manufacturer in the world.
So if you are in the corporate offices of Perrigo, why do you hear Mylan's overtures and say, at least so far, thanks but no thanks?
Well, for Perrigo, if we go with the idea that they're really thinking about their long-term stockholders, Perrigo may sincerely believe that their company is worth more than the Mylan offer. We realize it is a premium that Mylan is offering, and it's a pretty small premium based on today's stock price. I figure it's about 6%. But we have to realize that Perrigo's stock price has been bid up because of this. If I go to the lowest point that Perrigo's stock price has been in the last 52 weeks, then it's about a 20% premium. But that's what the marginal shareholder believes that Perrigo is worth. There are a lot of people out there that are much more optimistic about Perrigo, and if the stock price went up 6% or they had an offer to sell at 6% more, they wouldn't immediately sell. So I'm not going to discount the idea that Perrigo is saying to themselves, we're worth more than that to our stockholders to hold on to it. So of course, there's always part of it that it's not always great to be on the receiving end of a takeover if you're top management. You're not going to end up being CEO anymore. So that's part of it. But I'll go for now with the idea that Perrigo is saying this offer just isn't adequate, and giving our shareholders 2 shares of Mylan shares or 2.3 shares of Mylan shares plus the cash in the long run is not as good a deal as holding onto the Perrigo stock.
Have we reached the point now that there is a hostile takeover underway that we can safely say that negotiations are not going on anymore? In other words, perhaps when Mylan refused the first few offers, when Perrigo refused the first few offers from Mylan, maybe they were trying to bid up the price. But at this point, if we're at the stage of a hostile takeover, can we say that no one is doing anything here to truly negotiate?
I think we've kind of gone beyond hostile, because there are a lot that are hostile, but it's more like, no, that's not good enough, go away. The other company comes back with a higher bid and we say, okay, sounds good. We'll recommend to our shareholders you do that. And it becomes a negotiating tactic. Given the back and forth lawsuits, given the words that have been exchanged between these two companies, it's gone from really hostile to antagonistic. So my hunch is there aren't going to be a lot of further negotiations between the two management teams.
Hostile takeover, in terms of its definition, is one company going directly to the shareholders of another, right? And going around corporate management.
Without corporate management's blessing. And again, that can happen. And often what happens is we say, we're going to offer you $50 a share. We say, that's no good, go away. They call it hostile. Then they come back later and say, okay, we'll give you $55 a share. And we say, okay, that's great.
And then recommend to the shareholders,
and
perhaps
then we'll say to and either be neutral with the shareholders or recommend to the shareholders that they go forward with it. So hostile can be kind of a dynamic thing.
as you say, this one has kind of taken another step here. We've gone from hostile to antagonistic. There's been lawsuits back and forth. Perrigo claiming that Mylan has made misleading statements about Perrigo. Mylan has then countersued and said that Perrigo said things about their company which are not true. At the end of the day, is this the sort of thing that poisons the water, even if these two companies at some point end up merging?
I would think so, because they're basically calling each other liars, and that's really hard to come back from. Hostile takeovers don't happen that often. Truly hostile, antagonistic to the end. Any takeover is hard to pull off, even when the two sides get along at the start. I mean, marriage is rough, even when you like each other. When you go in hating each other, it's extremely difficult. And having that bad blood kind of in the water at the start will make it very difficult for Mylan, if they're successful, to integrate the Perrigo operations.
Is it possible that even if a merger makes perfect sense on paper, and we're not saying this one does, but hypothetically, if the merger makes perfect sense on paper, that going through this whole process of hostile takeover, nasty words back and forth, means at the end of the day, the end product is not what you had hoped for in terms of bringing these two companies together?
Absolutely, because these two companies are going to have to work together. Mylan feels they can get a lot of synergies, which is some learning from each other. Some is going to come through layoffs, getting rid of duplicate processes, things like that. In order to do that effectively, you can't have everybody fighting tooth and nail. There has to be some feeling that there's a greater good there and this is a good product. And from the outside, it sure doesn't look like there's that feeling that, you know, this is inevitable or this is just business. There's a thought that this has almost become personal.
In the past, you have commented on other mergers and have said that sometimes companies don't really think about the bad blood that might get created, or they don't think about how people view that company which is taking over, that you're just looking perhaps at dollars and cents, or at least the way it looks on the balance sheet. Has Mylan overlooked that here, or does it seem that they've overlooked that they may be seen as the bad guy when this is all said and done, even if they get to acquire Perrigo?
Mylan's been through a lot of interesting boardroom intrigue, to say the least. Some people say that the Perrigo offer was really a takeover defense to keep Teva Pharmaceuticals from buying Mylan. Now, Mylan fought Teva tooth and nail, even though Teva made a pretty good offer, and they used some interesting defense tactics. And finally, Teva said the heck with it, and they went and made another smaller acquisition, which they feel that they can bring in and do successfully. It is something they have to realize, that you can get the winner's curse. Yeah, wow, we won. Look, we bought Perrigo. We won this tender offer war. But now you're cursed that you're stuck with it. Yeah, you've won. You've paid a premium. You've promised a lot of synergies. You have to make it work. And certainly coming in with a bad reputation, or a reputation in some ways of hypocrisy, that we fought Teva tooth and nail. We employed a lot of interesting strategies to do it. And then we called Perrigo names because they wouldn't, you know, concede to our offer. It's certainly not going to make it easy in the eyes of investors, and certainly with the eyes of employees of the company.
You have in the past expressed some skepticism about companies trying to acquire other companies. And you've said that sometimes, you know, people overlook some of the problems that come about when you bring about a big acquisition. When you get into hostile takeovers, does that just add to the skepticism that someone like you has looking at it from the outside?
Absolutely, because these are all about implementation. It's not something where it's all going to be done come November. It's going to take years for them to figure out how to bring these two companies together and do it effectively. And there are going to be lots of unforeseen costs. They're promising a lot of synergies, a lot of money savings, or a lot of revenue enhancements because of this merger. The real trick is actually coming through on those promises. And that takes a different kind of management skill than what you can do through public announcements to faraway shareholders. That's got to be more up close every day, gaining people's trust and moving forward. Most big mergers and acquisitions, and for Mylan, this would be a big merger and acquisition, don't work out very well for the acquiring firm because they are just so hard to implement. So any of them, I'm skeptical of. But this one probably especially so, given the footing they're getting off on. I have a different view of business. I don't think business is played out in Wall Street with all these kinds of things. I think it's management taking a long-term view and figuring out how can we get costs down? How can we make our customers happier, expand customers in a profitable way? And that's a day-to-day working with people, developing a culture, thinking about your processes kind of thing. And that's what will have to take place after all this boardroom drama and Wall Street drama is done. If the acquisition actually goes through.
Is a merger and acquisition more a way to acquire the work that some other company has done? Is that how that is often viewed, as opposed to, as you say, the day-to-day making your product better, bringing your costs down sort of work?
Well, there can be good reasons. I mean, there may be redundancies where, you know, we don't need two chief financial officers anymore. We may be able to make better use of certain plants and things like that. And some of those types of things in a non-hostile environment could work out in Perrigo's favor, because Perrigo is very, very good at manufacturing these pharmaceuticals. Another reason to do them could be market power, where we both sell the same kind of a product to the same customer and we won't be competing against one another. That's one that's going to be really interesting, because antitrust authorities are going to take a long look at anything that's going to make the world's biggest generic pharmaceutical maker. And they're going to take a long look at this one. And what they normally do is say, well, here's two areas where you guys really compete. You have to sell one or the other to somebody else so we keep that competitive mix. My worry here is Mylan has basically said, we'll do whatever it takes to get through antitrust authorities. And I don't know if that's great business, because you need to be flexible. Sometimes the antitrust authorities will tell you so many things that it makes the deal no longer attractive. You can't get the economies of scale. You can't get, you know, the market power that the antitrust authorities are trying to take away. But even the economies of scale go away. One of the greatest CEOs are often thought of all time was Jack Welch at General Electric. And one thing that he did that I was very impressed with is towards the end of his career, General Electric was going to buy Honeywell, and this was going to be a huge acquisition for General Electric. Well, it was going through fine, and the antitrust authorities said, well, in order to finish this deal, you need to sell off all these assets. Jack Welch took a look at it and with his team and said, well, there's no real reason to do it anymore, and they walked away. Mylan is kind of saying, no matter what they say, we're not going to walk away. And that's somewhat problematic. There's a lot of challenges that this acquisition would face, even if it's approved by shareholders.
You've mentioned, you know, some of the antitrust regulations. Does this get complicated at all by the fact that Perrigo is now what they call domiciled in Ireland, that they still have mainly their offices and operations are in Allegan and other parts in the United States, but for tax purposes, they have established their headquarters as Ireland, and also Mylan has established their headquarters overseas. Is that going to add layers of regulatory approval that they're going to have to get through?
Absolutely. Mylan's in the Netherlands, and in Perrigo, while all their administrative offices are in Allegan, is domiciled in Ireland with these inversions. And that's a whole nother story to talk about. But it certainly adds an awful lot of legal complexities. We're really working with three countries' legal systems here in a lot of ways. One thing, for instance, with Irish law, for you to force out minority shareholders, meaning you have to take the deal, you have to have 80%. They'll have to have 80% of Perrigo shareholders tendering their shares to force out the other 20%. Mylan has said, even if we just get 50%, that's okay. But it leaves it kind of in limbo what happens with that stock, because Mylan will have control of the company, but there will still be this Perrigo stock floating around that people own that hasn't been tenured. And I can't even begin to figure out how they're going to sort all that out. So there are complications when you look at the laws of these different countries. It was interesting when Mylan was fighting Teva. They used an interesting takeover defense, which could only be really used through the Netherlands, could be used other places, but it was a special to the Netherlands called a stitching defense, where they actually set up another company, which is a shell company, if I understand it correctly, which was owned by Mylan, but had nothing really in it, but had veto power over the acquisition. And so the laws of these different countries definitely come into effect with these types of things, and it makes it extremely complicated.
As you noted before, you take Perrigo at their word that they just don't see this as an attractive enough offer financially. Is the idea of a lawsuit back and forth here, could it be a way, at least on the Perrigo end, of gumming up the works a bit, slowing things up, making it more difficult for Mylan to get its message across to Perrigo shareholders?
Well, absolutely. And it could be a harassing thing, but it could also be that they're saying, listen, these are things that we believe are false that Mylan is saying. And it's difficult. I can't get in the heads of all of the Perrigo top managers. They may not even realize what they're doing. They may be rationalizing that this is a bad thing. And it's difficult. We're dealing with human beings here. It definitely makes things a little more difficult for Mylan, but at the same time, it may be that Perrigo simply saying, no, we have an obligation to say these are not factual statements that Mylan is making, and we need to let our stockholders and people know that.
We mentioned earlier that there could be some complications from the fact that these companies have domiciled overseas, so you have more regulatory eyes looking at the deal, I guess. Does the lawsuit, and now counter lawsuit by Mylan, also create complications that make this even more difficult to get to completion at some point?
I think a lot of it is it takes the air out of the room. The big thing that I worry about as a person who wants business to succeed is I'm sure the talk all summer long in the Mylan board meetings and with the Mylan top management team has been first the Teva takeover and this Perrigo takeover and all this discussion. And you wonder, are they really thinking about how do we make good generic pharmaceuticals at a reasonable price and make good money off of it? And that's my biggest worry about all these sideshow things, all the regulations they're going to have to deal with, all the back and forth lawsuits and things like that, is it simply takes all the air out of the room for these companies. And I would hope, you know, from what I've heard, Perrigo just keeps saying business as usual. We're going to keep working with the idea that we're going to be a standalone company. But there's a worry that nobody ends up minding the store because we're so busy playing this merger and acquisition game. And we saw that to a certain extent with Mercedes and Chrysler. And that was a friendly combination where for 3 or 4 years, the big topic of conversation was how do we do this acquisition? How do we deal with the merger? How does this all come together? And they kind of forgot to keep making really good quality cars, and both companies suffered.
David Flanagan, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you, Gordon. I appreciate it.
David Flanagan is a professor of management in Western Michigan University's Haworth College of Business. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. If you are imagining the events that can lead to an emergency room visit, you might think of an accident, perhaps a sports injury. How about falling? The National Safety Council says that falls account for nearly 9 million visits to the emergency room each year. It's especially risky for the elderly. 1 in 3 adults over 65 fall every year, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that falls are among the leading cause of fatal and non-fatal injuries for older people. Borges Medical Center is offering classes on balance and falling through November. Megan Gose is Injury Prevention Coordinator and Educator for Borges. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Who's at risk of falling? Who could perhaps sustain an injury falling around the house or anywhere else?
Well, like you said, 1 in 3 older adults over the age of 65 fall each year. So it's very prevalent for maybe the older generation. But falls can happen for anybody. There are a lot of factors that are risky for falls as well.
Are there some people who just don't have particularly good balance and they might be somewhat at risk of falling?
Yeah, there are. You know, and as you get older, maybe your activity levels kind of dwindle down a little bit, and that's a risk factor for falls if you're not as strong as you used to be. But as far as balance, you know, anyone can exercise, and that's what we focus on in this class. The more active you are and the more you're taking care of your body, the stronger your body is.
So can balance be improved for someone who might not feel that they're especially strong on their feet?
Absolutely.
What sort of exercises are good for that sort of thing?
Through Manor Valence, we do a lot of exercises. We work on all of the major joints in the body. You know, your ankle is most important. That's the one that sends all the signals from the terrain you're walking on. If you're tripping over something, you know, it sends those messages to your brain. And if that joint is strong, then you're more or less to fall because you can account for changes in the terrain when you're walking. So we definitely work on that and Manor Valence. But as far as having a strong overall body, that would help with balance.
Running, aerobic exercise, that sort of thing.
Sure, or even just muscle conditioning or range of motion exercises as well.
Are there certain activities which people may take part in and think that they're not particularly risky, but maybe they do increase the risk that someone might fall?
Yeah, small example. I mean, how many times have we stood on a chair to change a light bulb? Or if you're using an assistive device, a walker, a cane, how many times have you thought, well, I can make it to the kitchen without it, you know, and that can cause a fall. So what we talk about in Manor Valence is all those little habits that you may have that are risky behaviors that you don't even think are risky behaviors. Even something as simple as having clutter in your home can cause a fall as well.
So can a home be made safer for someone and made so that they are not as likely to fall?
Absolutely. Area rugs are a big risk factor. You can trip over them. Even if you have area rugs with the non-slip stuff under them, they can still move. Having railings in your home is a good idea, too. Pets are a big issue. You know, cats always want to rub on your legs or the dogs are jumping. So making sure that your pets are under control when you're moving around in the house can help with preventing a fall.
You mentioned kind of looking around the home for clutter and those sort of things. Can you also look to make a home maybe a little more friendly to a fall so that maybe you do fall, but perhaps you limit the injury that could come about as a result?
Yeah, you can make changes in your home, making sure that you don't have hard stools everywhere. If you do fall, you're not going to hit them. Making sure you have maybe a phone in every room. In case you do fall, you can call for help if you can't get up. Maybe things that you wear when you're in the home as far as good slippers or no slippers at all. Keep your tennis shoes on. So there are things that you can do in the home as far as, you know, stools or rugs or whatever you have in your home to make it safer.
You mentioned having a phone in every room. Might also having someone just keep a cell phone on them not be a bad idea, because it is terrifying to think of someone falling and just kind of stuck there.
Yeah, and unfortunately that happens a lot. So if you are planning ahead and making sure that you have systems in place in case that does happen, you'll be safer. Maybe a life alert button around your neck if that's, you know, for you. And again, what works for one person might not work for everybody. So you just have to kind of assess your situation and see what would work best for you.
Are there things that might be aimed particularly at people who have aging parents? You know, they may be caregivers or something like that and may not be particularly at risk right now of falling, but they might be on the lookout or caring for someone who does have a greater risk.
Yes. I've had people in caregivers take the Manor Valence class for ideas because, like I said, we talk about home modifications, physical mobilities. Falling is not a natural part of aging, but aging is natural. And, you know, it's going to happen to everybody. So if you're planning ahead and you have those ideas for the person you're caring for or your mom or your dad that may be there at one point, then you can take a more proactive stance and make sure that you're preventing falls in the future.
One of the things I see on your flyer for the Manor Valence class is that it's aimed in part at anyone who restricts their activities because of concerns about falling. Do people get scared? And is that something that maybe they have to work to overcome? I mean, can you get so scared that, in fact, you make yourself even more at risk in some ways if you're just almost frozen by the idea that you might fall?
Yes, absolutely. And that's why this class was created. It's tailored toward the fear of falling. And maybe you have fallen in the past, and that's what makes you afraid of falling. So you don't go out and do the things that you used to love, going, you know, to a show or going to your grandson's soccer game. You know, if you're afraid of falling, that limits your activity. When you limit your activity, your body becomes weaker, and then that causes a greater risk for fall. So even if you haven't had a fall, maybe some people are just really afraid of falling, and we worked through that. We take negative attitudes and we learn how to tailor them to make them more positive. So maybe I'm generally nervous when I walk is something we talk about, and that's kind of negative. So in the class, we'll learn to change that to I'm confident when I walk with my walker, or I'm confident when I walk with, you know, my friend, and kind of change attitudes about that to make it okay for them to go out and be active and just slowly overcome that fear of falling.
You mentioned they're walking with a friend. I'm wondering if the buddy system is not maybe a bad idea for a couple of people who may have this fear of falling or have a concern that if you go out together, there's somebody who can call for help or pick up a cell phone or whatever has to be done. The idea of being alone and falling may be terrifying, but being with somebody else may be a little different.
Yes, and it is different. You know, if you're an individual who's home a lot and you're home alone a lot, you know, maybe that fear would be greater because you think, you know, how can I call for help or what would I do if I'm fallen, I'm alone? But if you're with someone, like you said, there's someone to help if you need it, someone to call help for help. And, you know, if you're afraid of falling and you don't go out of your house as much as you used to, you know, that can slowly turn into depression. You know, these things sneak up on us. So if you're with a friend, you're getting that socialization, you have someone to help, and it's just generally a more positive experience for the person. So having a buddy and using the buddy system, definitely that would help.
You do mention setting realistic goals for increasing activity.
Mm-hmm.
As you work with people, especially if they're a little older, do you have to sometimes recognize the limits of what they can do at 65 as opposed to what they could have done at 35?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, we always say, do what you can do. You know, if you're 65, maybe you're not going to go out the next day and run a marathon. But if you're going to walk more in your neighborhood or walk to your friend's house, you know, just do what you can do at that time. We talk about in Matter of Balance, there's formal exercise and informal exercise. Both of them, you're moving and you're working on, you know, being stronger and making your body stronger. But you don't necessarily have to go to the gym to exercise. If all you can do is, like I said, walk around the neighborhood or just walk more often, then that's perfect exercise for that person and their body.
Can informal exercise include perhaps walking to do an errand that otherwise you might have gotten in the car for?
Yeah. Yep. Anytime you're up and moving, and if you're using the assistive devices, if you know you need to use those, so make sure you're being safe about it. But yeah, walking can definitely be exercise. That's good for anybody, but we just stress, do what you can do. You know, it shouldn't be something that's stressful. It should be something that's enjoyable and something that's good for your body.
Assistive devices, you mentioned a walker, a cane. I can imagine there are some people as they reach their later elderly years, shall we say, who find, you know, having to use those things to be cumbersome, or perhaps it's, you know, a matter of pride that they don't want to. But is that something that you talk about, that these are important tools to avoid the fall that you don't want to have?
Yeah, we talk about that a lot. A lot of people that are in the class have canes or walkers. And sometimes it's common for them not to want to use their cane because they want to feel like they have a, you know, like a cumbersome device that they have to use and carry around. But we talk about, you know, if you have it, use it. It helps. You have it for a reason. During the class, the 8 weeks class of Matter of Balance, we actually have an OT or a PT come in and show them how to use their device correctly. Maybe they have fallen and they have knee replacements or hip replacements. The OT will show them how to get up off the floor and use their device and get help. So we not only do we stress the importance of using their device, but we have a therapist come in and show them how to correctly use their device.
OT and PT are
occupational therapist and physical therapist.
So these devices, that's another, I suppose, factor we have to work in here, mm-hmm. that people may have a cane, but perhaps they don't lean on it correctly. There's a learning that goes on with that as well.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, maybe someone doesn't have it adjusted properly. You know, if your cane's too high, it's not going to work for you the way you need it to. Or if you're not walking correctly with your walker and it's more getting in the way instead of helping you, that can cause a fall because you're not using the device correctly. So we talk about that in the class, and we make sure that when they leave the class that they are using their device correctly and they're safer in general.
Megan Ghost, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Megan Ghost is injury prevention coordinator and educator for Borges. More information about the Balance Matters class at Borges can be found at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.